Okay. That's all I'm going to do.
You know what?
I can do the whole thing, man.
Screw the quote this episode. I think we are introing with that.
Can we do that? Just like the whole thing?
Oh, yes. That's awesome.
Even like there near the end where it's like...
Welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by myself, Will Lentz, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Currently regularly hosted by myself, Brett, and Daryl Lloyd. Thanks go out to George R. R. Martin for the world we're all fans of, FFG for this amazing game, CardGameDB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward for the Creative Commons license music that you hear in this episode. This is Season 4.
Whoa, spoiler alerts.
Yeah. Spoiler
alert. Daryl, I think 6 months ago we passed spoiler alert for you. Yeah, maybe 2 years ago.
Well, if you're watching the show, you already... I mean, I guess you already found out, so... But still. I love how it didn't dawn on me whenever I saw the Maester Aemon Targ card. Like, it just didn't even dawn on me. Oh, well.
It didn't dawn on you that his name was Aemon Targaryen?
Yeah. Well, it just says Maester Aemon. I mean, come on.
All right, fair enough.
Oh, well.
Well, I think the listeners most certainly recognize Daryl there by voice and by name. And I'm Will Lentz, frequently known as Kenan. But I'm not sure many of the listeners would recognize that other voice anymore. What mysterious stranger makes an appearance this week?
One of the original two champs from Two Champs and a Chump.
Oh, that's the name of the show. I forgot.
One might argue the champ, the original champ, as you were the first on the show to have won a championship.
Yeah, anyways, this is Greg Atkinson, Dobbler, for the very few times I post on boards.
Dude, but when you do, you contribute such thoughtful and concise additions to the discussion, like how much you really hate seeing that dude on the Knights of Hollow Hill card, and you want it restricted so you don't have to see him as much.
That is one ugly dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't agree with that enough.
He needs a mustache or something. I don't know.
Like a Ned Flanders mustache. Like,
and he just winces so much when he smiles. Like, what's up with that? What's up with that, Greg?
Yeah.
I'm just giving you a hard time.
But when I smile, my eyes shut.
Oh, I know it. It actually didn't dawn on me that, like, that was your smile. Like, I was like, I wonder why they did the art like that. Like, he's just, like, smiling for a photo. Like, you know what I mean? Like... And then I went and I looked at your Facebook pictures, and sure enough, that's just how the man smiles, okay?
It's always the same.
That guy is having a great time at that bar. Deal with it.
Deal with it.
Like, you know? Yeah. Amazing that such destructive and just insane decks come off of such a smiling picture of a guy.
Mm-hmm. Destructive and insane, and you know what? I feel like listeners would freak out on me if I don't take this opportunity. We didn't mention it beforehand to Greg, so I don't want to, you know, get into a real deep discussion, but in a couple sentences, Greg, or however long you feel like, should my agenda be restricted?
No. Although, I will say I brought it up to FFG employees at Worlds that they should at least consider it.
Wow, you brought it up to them at Worlds.
I did. And then it didn't win Worlds, and Alvaro won with his Lanny deck, and I'm like, yeah, it doesn't need to be restricted.
All right. There you have it, guys. That proved it to Greg. the designer of the card himself.
There you go. Hey, it didn't win Worlds. That's a good enough excuse.
All we need are excuses.
That's all right. Obviously, we say destructive decks. I mean, in like a powerful deck. I'm not saying that the agenda itself is destructive. Just to clarify that, I only see it in a good light.
Did you guys do a Berlitha on Knights of the Hollow Hill?
Yeah, sure did.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real quickly, Daryl, your position was what? I don't want to know your reasoning. I just want to know your conclusion.
I'm pretty sure I said leave it the hell alone.
Okay.
I did in passing mention an errata, but I think that was my final consensus.
Yeah. On Knights of the Hollow Hill, I voted leave it the hell alone, though I may be a little concerned about the way a couple other cards interact with it.
Okay. So you have an announcement for our listeners, regional season.
Yeah, sure enough. Or maybe FFG had an announcement, and we're just passing it along.
That's more accurate.
Yeah, they posted it up. By the way, for listeners viewing the article on FFG's site, friend of the show / former semi-host, Justin Fox, features prominently in that particular picture, and I am far, far, far in the background.
Hey, my back is in there. We're in nice. We're in the same fucking gray hoodie that I've been wearing in every picture FFG's taken of me for the past like 4 years. Like, if you go back and look, I'm always wearing that hoodie.
It's just
this sounds less like an FFG problem and more like a Daryl problem.
Yeah,
it is. Well, I used to think that was my lucky hoodie, but. I don't think that's the case.
Daryl's definition of lucky is radically different from everyone else.
Yeah. So I would say if those pictures were you, like, after the cut, Sweet 16, in one of those single elimination games wearing the hoodie, then it's a lucky hoodie. But since all of those pictures of you are after O2 drops, then I definitely consider it not a lucky hoodie.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't be wearing it anymore.
Yeah, maybe
Fox is looking good.
Yeah, maybe you should upgrade to one with the fur trim on the hood, like Ingrid there in the photo.
Yeah.
It's a little classier that way.
It is more stylish, I will say that. Damn it.
Okay, but on to the actual content of the post. I'm sure many listeners have seen this, but it's worth noting. They are really tightening things down as far as regional season this year goes. There's only going to be at max 16 regionals this year, it looks like. They broke down the U.S. into 8 official regions, which they've mapped out and color-coded for us and everything, and each region can have 2 apiece. And they've never gone that far. The term region has always been really loose before. What do you guys think? Locking it down and really defining it like this, is that an improvement? Or did you like it better in the more nebulous sense?
Well, Will, I don't know if you remember this, but back in the CCG days, they did have more defined regions. And each region got one regional tournament, and that was it. I remember back in 2000 and either 2004 or 2005, I don't really remember, Missouri, you know, we had a thriving play group in Joplin with 20 some members at tournaments, just, you know, regular weekly play tournaments, and we did not get the regional. Instead, some play group in Colorado got the regional, and they had like 5 people show up.
Wow, I did not remember that.
And I remember being really, really frustrated at that. And, yes, then they ended up going to more nebulous ones where, you know, if you applied, there was a good chance you got it. And then last year, it seemed like anybody who applied got a regional. And we had 100 across the U.S. That's what it felt like. So I don't know if this year is maybe like overreacting to last year, almost like they had too many. So now they're redefining these boundaries. I'm not worried for some of the regions, but there are going to be other regions like California where there's going to be some people upset.
You mean the people that were used to being able to attend more than one regional in the same city?
Well, also people, I mean, California itself is one of our most populous states.
Right.
And it is also one of our regions that has a very high density of Thrones players. And to get from one side of the California to the other side of the California is actually more of a drive than it is for us to drive to Minnesota from southern Missouri. So, you know, I don't know. There'll be some complaints.
Is this map to scale? It must not be.
I for one am okay with it. I think the idea of a regional being a regional is the fact that it's multiple states are going to be a part of that. I think having less regionals makes it mean more. Now, California, like, that's kind of an exception there. That kind of sucks. Obviously, it has the highest population density in the country, let alone probably some of the biggest playgroups there are. So that is a major bummer. But unfortunately, that's just a part of it. And I like the idea of having the store championships and so on and so forth in that. So I like this move all around. Is it going to suck for some people? Absolutely. But I think as a whole, we've managed to increase the stock of a regional and make it mean something. You know, not just every store can have a regional or whatever. And maybe that'll suck for some playgroups, but maybe that'll make people participate at their store championship more. But maybe they were doing that before anyways.
Yeah, I think the store championships make a nice pressure valve. But I think the biggest thing for me is, I mean, looking at the program as a whole, is it'll probably make scheduling a whole lot easier so that things don't overlap, especially between games, because there are so many people that play multiple LCGs. And, geez, was it two or three of our LCG regionals also overlapped with LCG regionals in Tulsa and St. Louis? I want to say it was three. Like, all three of the ones we had another one within easy driving distance that was also overlapping on the same weekend. And
I can't remember.
Hopefully that won't happen with this system.
Yeah.
And I kind of like how they're making everything feed together. I like the buy system. The store championship gets you a buy to the regional. The regional gets you a buy to Gen Con. Assumably Gen Con gets you a buy to to World Championship Weekend, though we haven't really heard anything about it that far down the line.
Yeah. I think it's a good overall idea.
Prize kit look cool. I'm kind of digging it. I like how quickly the power counters were corrected.
Hey, shout outs to Steve Horvath, right on our Facebook. Kyle made a joke about FFG not getting to fix it quick, and Steve Horvath was like, boom, I fixed it.
Yeah.
And then to be double sure, he put a second comment down. He was like, hey, man, I fixed it.
That's how you know our Facebook page pulls some weight.
That's
we make
right.
a crack about what was probably a typo on the web page, and bam, it is fixed that night.
Steve is on it. Love it. And that Melisandre.
That's pretty good. I'm really digging the full bleed art down there. I wish I could actually see it a little larger.
Yeah. I think it's the double unopposed Mel. Pretty sure.
That's the rumor. I can see something at the bottom that looks like it's probably two challenge icons. So
yeah.
And the playmat looks pretty sweet. It's an all Baratheon themed package, which, you know, I guess it's cool.
Yeah.
I like spreading the love out a little bit more. But oh well.
Yeah, not everything can have Jaime Lannister on it.
Yeah, and by spreading the love out, I just mean I want it to be Lannister.
Just Jaime. Not even just Lannister, like just Jaime stuff.
Yeah, pretty much. He is a very pretty man.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy.
All right, so on this little segment, I think we'll get to hear a bit of a tourney report from Mr. Kyle Vansel, who was up in Chicago, I think, over the weekend, right?
Correct. Windy City.
What kind of tournament was this that they had going on?
Every month their meta throws together a little shindig. They put up some kind of prize support, and Chicago is kind of interesting because the vibe I get is that they have a lot of scattered smaller metas throughout the burbs and the city, and so it's a nice chance for everyone to kind of get together, have a more like a bigger, more official event, bring your A game, and try and play some top tier decks and top tier competition. So we had some friends up there we really wanted to see, and we saw this kind of coincide with it, and thought, what a great opportunity to get some thrones in during the off season.
Okay, cool. What kind of turnout did they have for the event?
It wasn't bad, considering the weather. Chicago Saturday was essentially whited out.
Oh, geez.
It was quite the drive up. A harrowing tale the likes of Tolkien would even be jealous of. But we got there and settled in. I think they had 10, 11 people show up. A lot of guys I've seen, some regional travelers and some more prominent players. So overall, I thought the quality was real, real good for there just being a monthly tournament.
Okay. So what'd you decide to play for this tournament, man? And why, I think, more importantly?
So I brought Laney No Agenda because at heart, that is by far and away my favorite house. And I took Gen Con and Worlds and forayed into Martell, which was great. I mean, I did rather well at both events. I was happy with it, but I missed it. You know, the kind of being, Lanny is the big dog to beat right now, it seems. I just felt like getting in on the action before an FAQ comes along and mucks up all the fun. So I took a deck, and I kind of looked online at some stuff, looked at the deck to run World, some other stuff, and kind of cherry-picked what I liked, and came up with a real nice build using some of the newer stuff from this last pack. And I honestly threw it together like 2 days before and said, this looks good, let's try it out. Played a test game Saturday night and then rolled into the tournament with it on Sunday. And it was a lot of fun. Cannot complain.
Cool.
But, I mean, it was pretty straightforward. I mean, there's a lot of cards that you're going to see. You're going to see Pentashis and Guild Halls. I like coin mints. I think they're really great, especially with I run the full suite of city plots, starting with City of Lies. So I love coin mints and think they're super versatile, and they're even better than C's. So not real concerned with flops.
I don't know if they're
dropping.
Better than C's, but
I like them.
I did run
C's.
Them at Worlds.
You can use the gold on anything, not just characters. It can be used on neutrals. You can use it any face to pop stuff out of shadows. Super versatile. I think they're really underrated cards. But, and you can store gold to the next round. And not important. Point is, coin mints are great. I like them. I ran them. And I'm not really as concerned with flops, because you are dropping essentially a 7 gold plot first turn to give you a nice boost on top of your normal setup. So, but other than that, it was pretty straightforward. I don't think I ran anything different. I ran the new guy, whose name is the new maester, the neutral maester guy, who lets you deny challenges. And of course,
Alaris?
I ran Cold Hands. Yes.
And Cold Hands. Not actually a maester.
Doesn't he have the maester trait, though?
No.
Citadel. It's a Citadel trait.
Yeah.
That makes sense. And put Cold Hands. And I didn't use the new summoned by the Conclave. I just was trying to think of who to go get, and there really wasn't anything that I felt needed to go in worth one of the plot slots, because it was the five cities, Cersei Schemes, then Valor, which seems to be a very popular plot set for this kind of deck. So I did that. I dropped the Guild Hall and ran the Castellan as my restricted, which I thought went really well. I tried to be really aggressive and be all about board position. So, and that kind of went well all day, kind of stayed true to my game plan. And, you know, I really liked it. So, Flavor of Landstar, I usually don't play. Usually I'm big into control and decks that, like, develop that slow lock turn 4, 5, or 6. So this was a nice change of pace. And I had a lot of fun with it.
Okay, cool. So, during said fun, I don't know, doing the game-by-game thing, I think, is probably a lot of tired to listeners here, but were there any particularly neat situations that came out throughout the day?
There were. There were three Lani No Agenda decks that day, so I knew the mirror match was going to happen eventually. First round, I played a guy playing Stark No Agenda, which was fun, and one that I hadn't seen Stark No Agenda. I don't know why I haven't. Just Stark works so well with so many of the agendas that usually they end up falling into one of them or slapping it on just because the theme works really well. So seeing No Agenda was kind of interesting as a nice counter to a lot of stuff. But so that was kind of neat. Second round was a mirror match, which was fun. And it was my first time playing against it. And it's interesting getting that perspective and seeing those cards come back at you with some of those Lannister on Lannister interactions, like the Iron Throne, and you just play things differently. Yeah.
Or you know, now Pentoshi versus Pentoshi.
Yes, which was the all-star of my last round of Swiss. It was, we were both 2-0, and he played Lani, City of Shadows, and I have never, ever, ever had a game like that in my whole fucking life. The TO, Doug, and I think this is a great idea because this store tournament said, you know what, we're not going to play the time. You know, we came to play, let's just play the games. If it gets ridiculous, I'll call it, but let's just play them out. I'm like, alright, that sounds great. So, I lock horns with this guy, and he's got 2 black cells, a guild hall. At one point, I've got all, and by the end of it, this is now, by end of it, I mean plot like 17.
Jeez.
I've got, and like, yeah, half the rounds weren't doing anything. Between the 2 black cells and the guild, I mean, I have a more aggressive board position, but he's locking up 2 characters with the black cells, one with the guild hall. He's got 3 Pentoshis out. I've got 3 Pentoshis out. Like, it was just freaking ridiculous. And I had the 3 condemns in my hand, but I had them early game, but they're useless against the shadows locations. And by the time he had the Pentoshis out, it was just, oh, it was bad. I have never had a slugfest quite like that. That was just so inert. So pointless. I mean, it was silly. It was silliness. But
so it lasted an absurd number of plots. Like, minute-wise, did you guys... How close to time was this?
Oh, we had it blown past it. My guess is 90 minutes.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Before he sailed that thing through. I mean, and he just kind of edged it out little by little. I got my Iron Throne out. He got hit. And we're both running full city plots. So we keep picking off people, our locations, and keep picking off characters and kneeling the board out. And those 2 Valors, obviously. It was just the most ridiculous, ridiculous game. And I enjoyed it because I love Lani Shadows, and to see it succeed and do really well was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, being on the receiving end of it was just so brutal. I'm like, this is a negative play experience if there ever was one, just for the sheer time. So, yeah, I recommend that if you're ever playing Lannister and your opponent is as well, just offer them a beer for every Pentoshi they don't play, and it'll save you both a lot of time. Because, my God, that was ridiculous. So yeah, I lost that game, didn't feel real good about that. After that, I played Tommy, so shout out to Tommy. Without him and his lovely wife, Darlene, we never would have been able to make the trip, and they were amazing hosts, and, you know, they exemplify everything I love about Thrones, you know, the great community and the support. I know he's probably listening, so shout out to you, Tommy, you're the man. They're great players, and even better people. So I played him, and I had to beat him, and that sucked, because I hate playing my friends on Top Cut. It's the worst.
Better than early, at least.
Yeah, I guess that's true. At least you guys both have, at least you both have good tournaments. So he was playing No Agenda, a little different than mine. I just got ahead early and was able to hold on. And for the finals, it's me versus Brian Bleers. He's playing Dothraki. Now, he just took down in his semifinals match a Stark Wildling, like, Stonewall Winter deck that just threw up a beef wall that you could not take down. And to see Brian cream him did not have me feeling very well at all. I felt pretty fucking terrible about it, to say the least. So I sit down, we start to play, and Brian gets out some beers. I'm like, all right, this is going to be fun. And he starts, like, fucking with me. Like, he's singing this song, and the only lines that I can catch are, I'm in a tent, something.
Kyle?
Will he still there?
Yep. Yep, I've got you again. You might start over with the song.
Okay. So Brian starts singing the song, and it's to the tune of Lola. So go look it up if you haven't heard it. And he's like humming along, and all I catch is, nah, 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 I'm in my tent, nah, nah, nah. And he goes, he showed me his whip, and I showed him my sword. Oh, my Jogo, Jogo. Oh, my Jogo. And I'm like, is he really, like, I thought he was just singing the normal song. I'm like, is he fucking making up Dothraki lyrics to Lola? And I keep listening and listening, and he fucking is. And I, like, call him out on it, and he's like, yeah. So now he's singing out loud and belting it to people while whooping my ass. And he's just puking out dudes and puking out dudes. And, like, if any of you have played Brian, you know that it is the most enjoyable and distracting match you'll ever have. He's blowing kisses my way. He's winking at me.
Oh,
I just,
my.
I can't. I can't keep a straight face through this fucking match. I'm getting my ass beat, and I'm laughing and smiling. It's ridiculous. But it was a great time. I took him 10 plots. I got the Valor. I had a Valor second turn. I stalled him out to come back around again. But I just didn't catch that Iron Throne early enough to shut down his dudes. And he caught. Every time I could get rid of Jogo, there was a To Be a Dragon waiting for me. So, I mean, it was a good game. It was a good, good game. He did cheat at the end. I tricked him into triggering his Dragon Thief so I could Iron Throne him down.
Okay.
Got all pissy and took it back. I mean, the game was over, but I was like, let it be known that Brian won this by cheating.
Yeah.
So I'm saying it here for all the Thrones community to know. When you see Brian Bleers, call him a cheater. Because he is. And a flirt. And he never followed through on it. So really he's more of a cock tease. But we'll go with flirt for now. He deserves that. But no, great tournament. Great time. Still came home with swag. Got a store playmat up at Dice Dojo. Which was a great store. I was really impressed with it.
Huh, so they have, like, playmats with, like, their logo or whatever on them?
Yeah, it's bright. Let me see if I can find it. I will describe it.
That's that sounds pretty cool. I think more using, stores ought to do that.
Using my words, it's, like, bright orange, and it's like a ninja on it, and it says the world famous Dice Dojo, Chicagoland Games. But it's pretty cool. It's actually a really, really cool mat. So that's kind of neat. And then I got the new sweet alternate art Power of Blood. With the Royal Lannister Court on it. So, being a Lanny player, I dig that. And it's a plot I'll actually use. So
yeah, it's actually really sweet.
I enjoy it. So, yeah, I came home with some swag and good times. You can't really complain. Overall, I had a pretty kick-ass weekend. And I fucking love this game. Just to play some competitive Thrones, get that, like, blood pumping. That first game, that, like, butterfly in your stomach, like, don't fuck up, Kyle, fuck up. It just feels so good.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Man, I hadn't really realized how much I'd missed that since Worlds until I actually got there, you know, to Tulsa this weekend.
There's just something about your throwdowns meaning something that just, I loved it. Loved it. Now I'm so hungry. Ever since then, I'm, like, asking everyone within, like, 3 hours, I'm like, when's your store tournament? I'm like, I want more. I want it now. But it was good. It was a great time. I went up to Chicago 2 years ago for a regional, and it was fun. The venue was a little cramped, but I know this year they're making a real strong push to get a regional. They're looking at bigger venues and bigger stuff, and so I'm very excited to see Chicago becoming, you know, kind of like the powerhouse it was of old back in the CCG days. So kudos to the guys up there. I know some of you are listening. It was a great time, and I highly recommend if anyone's passing through Chicago on business or whatever to jump on that group and hit them up, because you're probably in for a good time.
Awesome.
And if not, just pizza and beer. I mean, you can't beat a Chicago pizza. You cannot. So, all of you New Yorkers listening, just, I know, I'm sorry, but you're wrong. The best pie in this country is in Chicago.
The best pie in this country is pumpkin.
Well, you know what, Will? We can agree to disagree.
Okay.
Pumpkin pizza.
Yeah, that actually sounds terrible.
That actually does sound really bad. Okay. Now that thought's over. Ooh. But no, yeah, kick-ass weekend. Great time. I'm glad I got to play with Lannister while it's up top for a little bit before that shit gets smacked down.
So here's a question for you then. You fairly obviously already kind of gave some Thrones-related slops from the weekend because of that absurdly long plotted game. Do you have any props, Thrones-related, possibly to cards?
Props to cards. I was not a big fan of Harry the Riverlands when it came out. I thought it was good, but with just so many kick-ass Lannister events, I just didn't see it making the cut. And I'm a bit of a believer after seeing it played to some pretty good effects. The other thing is that, you know, as much as I talked about it, I don't think Voltron decks are dead. I don't. I mentioned that on the podcast the other week, talking about Cold Hands, and Chicagoans were very quick to inform me of some ideas they've had, some characters they focus some decks around. They're like, you can still Voltron some shit up. You just gotta be crafting how you do it. So, I'm curious to see when regional season comes around if we see some sneaky plays and some people trying to juke out the meta. Because I don't think about it. I assume with Cold Hands that people are deterred from power characters. But I think you're going to see some. You're going to see some pretty sick, slick shit with the new summon by the Conclave.
I think I would agree there. It definitely has me wondering what houses I can afford to skip running an agenda in. I mean, aside from Lanny, of course.
I mean, it's a great, great combo deck opener. The one-sided search to get, you know, that character you need so you're not having to drop something for it. I think they're going to see some cool shit come regional season. I'm real, real excited. I've already had some people talk to me about some decks while I was up there that I hadn't even thought about, and now I'm going, holy fuck, I have no answer for that in my deck. Not one. And that's a terrifyingly awesome thought. So, I think this regional season is going to be even more bonkers than the last one. And we're about to get into, with the power level being what it is, and the card pool being what it is, we're about to enter Get Stupid Land. And I know a lot of people get bummed by that, but I fucking love all the crazy shit you see. Fucking love it.
Awesome. Well, Kyle, thanks for taking a little time to make an appearance here and give us a taste of the Chicago meta.
Yeah, it was a great time. Thanks, Will. Oh, and before I forget, I'm not sure if he'll mention it later, but Daryl and me this Monday at, I believe, 8 Central, 9 Eastern, so 6 Pacific, we'll be live streaming some Thrones games and talking about some stuff. I'm not real sure what's on the docket yet, but I know we're going to try and just get some games in and seeing how it goes, if people like it. So if you're bored and got nothing going on next Monday, we'll hopefully play in some stuff that's relevant to our turning reports. So you can maybe see some of the cards we talk about, some of the decks we talked about in action. But check that out. And should be a good time. And if it's not, I'll apologize for it now.
Well, awesome. I look forward to hopefully getting to check some of that out myself.
Yeah, you be there, Will. You check it out.
Be there or be square.
Or Will. All right, bud. You have a good one, and catch you guys out there in Thrones Land later.
You know, I can't think of a better / more awkward time to segue to the next section of the podcast for this week. Can you?
No way. Let's do it.
All right, so the three of us and what was originally going to be each of our significant others headed down to Tulsa this weekend. Some of us competed in the Valor Midwestus 2 tournament down there, which I originally thought was their store championship, but I misunderstood. But it was a fun event. We had a good turnout. 23, right?
Yes.
That sounds about right.
Yeah, it's a pretty good size, especially considering this wasn't actually, like, a regional. There's a lot of regionals that only get about 20 people or so. So that was nice. Now, some of you may have heard a little bit about how the weekend went, but I think in our tried and true fashion of tournament reporting here, we're going to start with the player who did the worst and work our way up from there.
All right, so as usual, I'm first.
Lay it on us, dude.
All righty, so basically, this was a painful lesson in that I am not Greg. I hadn't decided what deck I was going to bring, and at the last minute, I was like, while we're at the store, I was just like, yeah, this looks like fun, why not? So it is Targaryen Knights of the Hollow Hill, in which I had a lot of awesome Dothraki tech with the Vanguards and things like that, and was also running Favorable Ground and Hatchling's Feast and, like, some Burn. So I thought, hey, why the hell not? This all looks really good. Well, first game, I face off against Stark Siege of Winterfell, and I'm feeling pretty good. Turns out he flops Army Rob, and he's throwing down these armies, and he's got, like, high ground out, having these ways to stand them. I'm just keeping it cool. I'm taking it slow. That's fine. Turn two comes around, and I threat, and I get rid of his Army Rob. He's got, like, two cards in hand. And through this, he's already gained a bunch of power, obviously, running Siege. And I didn't really have much answers for early on. But I knew I could get him in the long run. So the next turn, turn three, he flops down a fleet from Wolf's Den, and I have like Illyrio and somebody else in, and he flipped Claim Two Plot, Siege of Winterfell, I think is the name of it, or Siege of something.
The three
you can't
four,
do
two,
intrigue challenges.
Yeah.
And I
River Run.
Right, and I had something. I can't remember what I revealed. It wasn't anything crazy. But my next plot was going to be, March to the Wall. So I could have gotten rid of this army. And he had, like, the Dromund out there that he could give guys renown, but that wasn't a problem right now. But he had already gotten up to, like, it was, like, some, like, 10 power or something ridiculous. And I had no really good answers for it, and I have a huge brain fart, and I attack him, and he defends, and he claims two power, and he stands his dues, and I'm like, oh my god, I'm gonna lose right here, right now, because I'm an idiot. If I just don't do anything, I win the game. But, and I look for a second, I was like, oh, wait a second, Fleet from Wolfden's a mercenary. I'll just ambush from the plains in my Jorah and discard him, no problem.
Oh.
And I do it, and I play him, and then I go, he's discarded. He goes, why is he discarded? I go, he's a mercenary. And I point, and I go, oh, shit. It was Manderly. Obviously, House Manderly. So I can't read upside down very well. So I got it. That's the wrong fleet. It's the Targ and the Barrow one. Yeah. So
I would like to point out to our listeners that Daryl, you can't read right side up very well.
Yeah,
so.
I know. Seriously. So he's like, dude, you can take it back. I was like, dude, it doesn't matter. I'll discard my Illyrio and you'll just win the game. Like that's it happens. So I could have had that game. Seriously, no problem. He's down very few cards. But regardless, he won. He played his deck right. Very nice guy, Josh Stout, I want to say was his name. Like, I love Siege. That's a cool idea. I played like a dummy. He wins. That's cool. And then from there on out, it was just really bad. I went 0-3, faced off against Zach Bunn and this crazy Targ deck he has, and it wasn't even close, 15-0. And then I play, and I think after that, I play Dennis I can't remember his name. He's playing Lanny Tunnels, which I was actually doing really well at the beginning, and then I just didn't draw it, like anything else that could deal with it. And I was even running King's Law on that deck and thought it would work out, but alas, it just was not enough, and he just had all the draw ever. He was draw capping himself like two turns in a row, so oh well. And then my last opponent, he plays a Greyjoy deck. He was doing Greyjoy Black Sails and trying to do some interesting things there. It just wasn't working for him. He did have the Hammerhorn Raiders out, and I did not defend a challenge, and then it was two claim because I forgot the way that worked. So after we were talking about how, you know, twice their strength, and well, if they don't defend, does that still count? And it indeed does, and I didn't think about that. But I did manage to salvage that win. He was using some fun tech with the Scaling Ladder and then the Theon Greyjoy, where you pay a gold to kneel a location. So that location was always knelt, so I could never defend those military challenges. But he was trying to do some unopposed tech, and he played like Fury of the Kraken or Rise of the Kraken. And that just, it was Rise of the Kraken, but it didn't end up working for him. So I had that win. So I went 1-3. I'm going to start playing the game more. This was a serious, sobering moment just to remember, like, you know, I have to work harder than some of these other guys to be very good at this game. And that's, you know, it just happens like that. And I just have to move on and accept that. So I know I'm a better player than how I did at this tournament.
I agree, Daryl. It was not completely indicative of your skill level.
Yeah, I'm not saying I'm you know, good at the game per se, but I'm not that bad. So, oh well. I mean, I should have learned from Gen Con when Dark Knot just handed me that Martell deck. I was like, dude, just do it. It's got all that sweet tech in it to dig deep and all that, and I just O2 dropped.
Were you wearing that hoodie?
I think I was. I'm pretty sure I was. So, you know, I just have to use a deck and familiarize myself with it and play with it better to do better. So maybe some of you other players out there have that problem. Hey, maybe you don't, but I do, and I'll remember that for the future. How about on to somebody who actually did something in this tournament? Will?
All right, I guess I'm up next. Well, it probably comes as no surprise to anybody that I played Lannister. I'd been fiddling around with Noble Cause for a while since it came out, and I really enjoyed how it played. It was the first thing to have me really actually interested in Baratheon Power Rush kind of stuff in probably ever, but I just didn't really feel like I could bring myself to play that in a tournament because it's just not my style of play, not the sort of thing I'm so used to. So I defaulted back to the Knights of the Realm deck that I had played at Worlds with a few updates. Someone in the Skype group the other day had somehow brought up that Knights deck, and they're like, yeah, that one where you only played like a dozen Knights. And I was like, no, it had to be more than that. So I went and counted because I had the deck list still. I was like, oh, crap, I only played 13. So I upped the knight count for sure. Left the plots and such the same. I've been really happy with them. And I went to go roll with it. So first round, I was up against, I always feel like I'm screwing up his name. I believe it's Keith, who was playing a Martell No Agenda deck against me. You know, it looked like he was trying to get the Viper online towards the end of the game with a couple of the, now my brain's shutting down, the two cost, give someone stealth, kneels them when they stealth past him, location.
Buddy? Oh my gosh. I can't remember the name of it right now.
Yeah, man,
I think you just accomplished a mass brain fart.
Yeah, wow.
That's just crazy. The worst feeling ever that we all
found. Oh, I had it too. It's Lost Oasis.
Yes. Thank you. Lost Oasis, because he had two of the oases, I think is plural, right?
Oasi.
out against me, and he had things going there. Thankfully, City Besiege plus a copy eventually got rid of those. And I was just able to, you know, grind out a win. Nothing too crazy there. Just had some Neil on the board. I had dropped down to one copy of the Alchemist Guild Hall so that it would hopefully conflict a little less with my Castellans. And I happened to draw the one copy of the Guild Hall, which was probably the best way I had in the deck to deal with the Viper. So that kept him locked down and kept him from being able to do a whole lot. Won that game, went on to round two against Rick, who was playing that Targ, House of Dreams, Danny Chambers deck that evidently people have been kind of raving about online lately. And it was a very interesting deck to finally get to see in action, discarding Guild Masters and getting them back and cycling attachments through the discard pile and tossing them to Harpy's Scourge and everything. And it got pretty nasty. And I found out just how bad it can suck to have Pentoshi Manors up against Shadow Parasites. Because if your opponent has two Shadow Parasites on the board, there is no good reason to trigger that Pentoshi Manor. You are not going to stop them from winning challenges that way. Also, not always that useful against Killer of the Wounded, either. It tends to stand them so that they can get more challenges. But sometimes does take away their keywords, which is nice if they've got Aegon's Blade. So it was definitely a tough match. It was kind of crazy to watch, to play. But I felt like there were some tools in the deck that gave me opportunity to kind of claw it back. And we wound up running out of time just after I had taken the lead back. I feel like if we had gone for, say, five more minutes, I would have had the legit win. I think it was 11-9. When we had to end the phase, but he'd pretty well emptied out his hand and didn't have more than one character on the board, so I was going to be able to just keep kneeling him while I made challenges. Third round, went on to play Jacob, who was running a Lannister no agenda deck, and when he sat down, he said, "Oh, you know, don't worry about it. This is not your standard no agenda." And so first turn, he reveals something by the Conclave. He goes and gets the Clegane Brigands, and I'm like, really, really, Jacob? This is something interesting that you're doing here? And then he proceeds to marshal it, and then I believe next turn, drop Beric, dupe Beric, put a Devious Intentions on Beric, and a Flaming Sword on Beric. And I said, oh, you're right, this is a different no-agenda deck. And I was able to keep Beric Knelt the whole game, so he didn't actually get to do anything, but it was sure interesting. And I had a terrible D-bad moment in that game. A don't be a Daryl, if you will. because he had Beric out with a dupe, right, and the Lannister Iron Throne. Then in my hand, I have Cold Hands and my own Lannister Iron Throne. So I'm looking at the board, I'm like, okay, I just keep Beric kind of out of the way and Knelt for a couple turns while I get the city plots, you know, high enough so the City Besiege can knock off the Iron Throne. Then my plan is, you know, that turn, drop my Iron Throne, then Cold Hands, targeting Beric, and of course, whenever he tries to save him with the duplicate, I can cancel that with the Iron Throne. What do? Play Cold Hands, and then he says, I'll discard my dupe to save him, and I look down at my board and try to reach down to my locations to kneel the throne, and realized I had played Cold Hands first.
Yep. Yeah. It's a perfect Daryl moment. Yeah. Having this awesome plan and then playing it out of order.
Yep. It totally would have worked. It was like a three-turn plan I'd been working on. And then I screwed up the last minute.
Yeah.
Still, though, I was able to take a win there since I was able to keep Barrick out of things. Last round, went on and played, what was his name? Josh, who was playing a Stark, siege deck. It was the army Rob based one. I think that was who you played earlier.
Yep.
And, I gotta give him props. He was super good natured about it. But it just did not go his way. First turn was a little rough. I knelt out like Roos and somebody else. Second turn, he went and grabbed, he used building orders so that he could go grab high ground to stand his armies, which is, you know, a pretty reasonable choice against a Lanny Neal deck. But that gave me the opportunity to go to search for a Pentoshi Manor. And then, lo and behold, what are two of the three cards that I draw during the next draw phase? The other two Pentoshi Manors. So that really creamed his ability to make challenges. So I made the cut to top 8 as a 4-0 with one modified win, which put me as the 4th seed. And I played against Alex, who was the 5th seed, who was running a House of Dreams Dragon Pit deck. And it just did not go well for me. First hand, did not have any income. So I took a mulligan and got, I think it was the Lannister Iron Throne and 3 one-strength weenies, which is not what you want to open with against Targ. So he wiped that with Threat from the North, and then just continued to beat me down. I didn't really get any knights. He brought out the shadows, not Jorah, the Shadows Barristan Selmy, so that he would have more knights than me, and I had to keep bouncing a Preston Greenfield in and out of play just long enough to match him on knights so that I would still draw 2 and then get him back into shadows so that he couldn't be burnt with a King's Landing assassin. But I was just never able to get back into that game. Thankfully, though, one of the other Lannister players made the top 8, and the guys there at Team Covenant were doing these neat little etched acrylic or whatever house cards, one for each house with a special little title on them that they were given to whoever placed highest with each house. So they had me play off against Chris, who was running a Lannister Knights of the Hollow Hill deck that just didn't really get any control locations. I think he saw one Pentoshi in the game there. So he kicked a few of my guys out of challenges with things like Watchful Servant or Walk of Shame, but it just wasn't enough to keep me from steamrolling to, I think it was a third turn win. Things just weren't firing for him. Even Marin Trant was able to do some work because he didn't have the spare locations to kneel, so Marin got to kneel out one of his characters so I could get some unopposed.
Wow, that's like a 1 in a million.
Yeah, I know. Marin Trant did something. Chris even had to stop and read him. He's like, what does that guy do again? So there you go. I won Warden of the West, and in my mind, I like to think of it as 3.5th place. Or something like that. I don't really know. But I think Greg's encounters are probably far more interesting.
I don't know if interesting is the right word. I think most of my games, win or loss, are going to sound about the same.
Maybe the deck itself is more interesting. Maybe that's what I should have said.
Well, to preface the tournament, I didn't know until a couple days before that I was even going to go. I had started getting some text messages from our friendly co-host, Will Lentz, as well as several of the Tulsa guys, you know, asking about going, and decided, oh, heck, I'll go ahead and go. My wonderful fiance said that she'd be happy to come with me. And so I decided to go. And I didn't really feel like building the deck. I haven't bought any cards in a while. So I asked Will if I could, use his Noble Cause deck. And he
fix it.
Well, let's start by saying I asked if I could use it first.
Okay.
And then Will agreed. And so the night before the tournament, of course, I laid it out and changed half the plots and changed, I say half the plots, I think I changed 3 out of the 7, and I probably swapped out 20 cards. The main thing I did is I wanted to add in Citadel Law. I think in a Noble Cause deck, which is at its truest and base form, is the most aggressive rush the game has ever seen. Okay, because that's really what this is. It's like I'm sacrificing draw in order to give all my guys with cost, all my Brathian guys with cost 2 or higher renown, and I'm just going to try and rush as fast as possible because I'm going to be drawing less cards than you. So, you know, I added in Maesters and Citadel Law. Maester Lomas is just so good to that deck to give it some staying power. And then I wanted Citadel Law so that I could potentially cycle into the plot that helped me the best. Just sort of like, okay, I want to see my opponent's plot. Now I'm going to cycle into whatever works best for me, you know. And I put in a couple interesting plots that, you know, other people may not agree with. Fear of Winter was money for me all day. There would be times when it'd be like my opponent either started with Knights at the Hollow Hill or didn't have a great setup. And I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and cycle into Fear of Winter so that I can have this first turn where I know they can't really stop me. And I'll rush for a ton of power. Well, not maybe not all 15, but enough to put intense pressure on the game. And so, you know, that's what I ended up doing. I was very thankful for that. And so first round I played Steven from the, Team Covenant guys. And, by the end of the second round, I had 14 power, revealed Winter Festival on the third plot, and won the game. Technically, nice. I think it was my fourth plot, but his third plot, because I had cycled.
And
after the game, he's like, there's nothing I could do to stop you. You know, he's like, he was playing just a Greyjoy no agenda deck, and, you know, he just didn't get anything to stop me from getting a ton of power. Second game, I play Ben Comstock. And Ben was playing a Martell No Agenda deck. And had Ben gotten his Venomous Blades, he probably could have made a game of it. But he didn't. And I believe I won on the second turn. Well, maybe again this was a game where I won on the third turn revealing Winter Festival. Yeah, that sounds right. I won on the third turn playing Winter Festival.
And you'd even tested against Ben the night before, and he made some changes based on those matches.
Yeah, and Ben made changes. Yeah, we both made changes after a couple of my test games. And then I sat down against Tim Bunn, and Tim has never beaten me in a tournament game, and he brought that up before the game, and I'm like, all right, well, it's your time to beat me. Well, I have this 5-card flop. It's looking great. Tim's playing a House of Dreams deck, Stark with Heron Hall, that just runs a lot of Stark goodness. And I put out a ton of dudes on the first turn, like a board of like 7 or 8 dudes. And he puts out quite a few himself, and he's going first, and it just happens to be that he puts out Reek and has equal amount of intrigue strength as I do. And I'm like, no! And he wins an intrigue against me, triggers Reek, takes my Stannis, wins a military with my Stannis against me, kills a dude. I do happen to win a military against him, but he is Arya Stark, the one that you can kill her, or I don't remember exactly how she reads, but he kills another one of my guys with Arya Stark. And then somehow someone else dies, his Lucas Blackwood, and he does another military against me. I don't even remember everything that happens. All I know is I went from like a board of 8 to a board of like four, of which one is his stinking reek, and I can never win an intrigue back. I can never win an intrigue back at him to get my stands back, and it was like game over. I knew it was game over.
Reek, that bastard.
Some painful shit right there.
And then, so then, final round of Swiss, I play against Chris Kaiser, who's playing a Lanny Nightellow Hill. It's very interesting. Lots of control. Lots of new events that I didn't even know what they did. I half the time I'm like, what does that event do? I need to read it. What does that event do? I need to read it. Like, all these different ones. I don't even know the stuff because I haven't played in the last 3 months. And he creams me. Again, phenomenal start. 5-card flop on my part. I have 2 more holies in hand, and I think I flopped 2. And I'm thinking, I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to do, you know, Power of Faith on the first turn. Well, he reveals First Snow of Winter. Now, as I mentioned, I'm playing the plot cycling events that it'll law, but I just didn't have it in hand, so I could not cycle him out of his First Snow of Winter. So all my dudes bounce back to hand. I have 1 3-strength guy that I happen to play, but he played the Lanny event, the house divided, to put it back on the top of my deck. So by the end of the first challenge phase, I have all my cards in hand, no characters on the board. He reveals rule by decree second turn. I have to dump my hand, and, you know, when I'm only drawing 1 card a turn, I believe I won 1 challenge that whole game.
Ooh.
We played a friendly game after that, and I actually happened to win the friendly game. But I'm like, okay, I'm done. And I said, hey, Daryl, you want to just play a friendly game? And Daryl's like, okay. So we sit down, and I'm like, I'm 2-2. I'm not going to make it, you know. And they proceed to read the cut, and they're like, Greg Atkinson, number 7. I'm like, what? How did I make the cut? Well, I guess a couple people had dropped, and I had the highest strength of schedule of anybody. So I made it in as the highest 2-2, and then single elimination, everything just started going my way. I had to play Chris Kaiser again, who we just played twice.
Yeah, right in a row too. Crazy.
And this was the only game all day that really wasn't over after 2 rounds. And I ended up winning on the 7th turn. I thought I was going to win much sooner. But Chris made a game of it, and that was a game where I started off early with a pre-game Battle of the Bay. Actually, I think I might have opened the game with 2 Battle of the Bays. Get him thinking, then I play Rule by Decree, knock him down to 4. But I end up winning both those epic battle power challenges, so I'm drawing 3. I mean, obviously not for both of them, but for 1. But I jumped out to a huge power lead. And he had to do a lot just to prevent me from winning, throwing every control card he could to stop me from winning earlier. But I just ended up pulling it out on rounds. I think it was on the 7th plot because I had gotten to recycle because I won on Winter Festival again. It was my 8th plot revealed, his 7th plot revealed, if I remember correctly.
Wow, that is a really long game for Noble Cause.
Yeah. Definitely. Next game I played Tim. I don't remember Tim's. He's the other Tim from Tulsa. Beat him in the 3rd round. He was playing Lanny. I don't remember if he was. No, he was playing. Never mind. He was playing Baratheon, Knights of the Hollow Hill. And he made 1 minor mistake in the game when he had a lot more cards than I did in hand. And he played Negotiations, and I played Rule by Decree. And he won Initiative, so he should have had his plot go off first. And he would have been left with 5 in hand, and I would have had to make the choice to dump my hand and be left with 5. And then Rule by Decree would have hit none of us, but instead he said Rule by Decree first, which means it hit him. And then he did Negotiations, so I just ended up with more cards in hand than him. Gotcha. But I'm not sure it would have mattered because, if I remember correctly, I had already put a ton of dudes on the board and just flooded the board, and I believe I beat him on the 3rd turn. Final game, I played Alex Kern, who was using the Targ House of Dreams Dragon Pit deck that you played, Will, and mm-hmm. I beat him on the 2nd turn. First turn, Fear of Winter. 2nd turn, Power of Faith, and just rush to the win. And the deck is everything a Bera Rush deck should be. It should have the capability for a first or second turn win. And, you know, when it doesn't work, it flames out in a big old ball of glory. So.
And Greg does love to be flaming.
Occasionally.
Mm. Wow. I figured at least some kind of chuckle about that. Come on, Daryl, back me up here.
I'm sorry, man. It's hard to make gay jokes about Greg when he's got a smoking hot fiance. With all due respect.
Robin's going to club me now. And she gave you a dirty look, Will, so.
Oh, she's nearby?
She is.
Oh, well, uh-oh.
I didn't mean that in a vulgar way.
Well.
Did not. My girlfriend's right here as well.
And see, I was going to go out of my way to prop your new fiance, but now it just sounds like I'm sucking up so she doesn't, you know, murder me the next time she sees me or something.
That's going to happen anyway, so you don't need to worry about sucking up.
Okay, well then.
Okay. Well, Greg,
yeah, honestly, this was one of the first tournaments I played a true, like a tried and true Rush deck. Yes, I had a couple of plot control elements in it, but I had no control elements in the draw deck itself. You know, like I could put in Black Cells, I could put in Wicked Seductors, I could put in Motleys, things that are some Bera control. I put in none of those. So, you know, it was kind of fun for once, just saying, I'm just going to go for it. You know, balls out, here we go.
There we go. That's what I'm talking about.
But it just had that nice little Greg touch with the plot stuff.
I was going to say, you know, the thing that separates one of Greg's ideas from one of mine, well, for one, his ideas are good, but really the decks that he creates just are all, the plot deck is always so solid. Every plot has a specific purpose, and they're all, you know, they're chosen with a thought in mind. It's not just like, oh, this is a good plot, so let's throw it in here. And it's not something as simple as, obviously, city plots, the synergy that goes with that. So he always chooses very good plots for his decks, and they always turn out to be just a huge difference. So I think that deck would have functioned so much differently if you just threw in some decent plots there, but that didn't have quite those effects. Oh, and the Maester stuff was baller.
Yeah, you know, speaking of Maester stuff, I was going to propose a little question to you guys. I was going to ask if you had a particular MVP or card that you would like to prop out of your deck for the day. And I have an idea of one for Greg's deck, but I don't want to speak for him. It's just one that it sounded really cool from when he was telling about it to me. I.e., it was a Maester.
You want me to start?
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, why don't you start?
You know, interestingly, in my games before the tournament, Lomas was by far the MVP. It wasn't even close. But the Lomas tricks didn't help as much during the tournament. Trying to even remember a game when I was regularly doing that. The only game I was set up to regularly do it was the second game against Chris Kaiser, and he kept Lomas knelt, so I couldn't even use him. He would kneel him during the standing phase. So outside of that, you know, I mean, it was probably Citadel Law. And just that ability to decide on my plots. But I don't think that that's what you're going to choose, Will. So tell me what you were going to choose.
Well, I mean, I don't want to choose over you. It's just one that, from what I had observed, it seemed like the new Crescent was really cool. And it sounded like he did a good little bit of work for you with Seat of Power over the day.
I think I got Seat of Power back once or twice, but... You know, half the time I was getting it back, I'd already dumped my hand, so it didn't even matter. You know, it's like, okay, I'm getting a Seat of Power back, but, you know, I have nothing to spend it on.
Maybe I was just thinking about the time. Was it Tim, you said, really went out of his way to knock your seat of power out.
It was Chris Kaiser, I think.
No, that was Chris Kaiser, okay, yeah.
And then you immediately just brought Crescent out of shadows and got it back. So maybe I was just too focused on that particular story.
Yeah, that was a fun little play because
that was excellent.
He hit it with Rally Cry as an opening plot. You know, played Rally Cry, hit my seat of power, and, you know, and he's like, all right, nice. I'm getting a head start on income. And I had started with Crescent and Shadows, and I wasn't even planning on bringing him out that turn. I was going to wait a turn to bring him out. And then I'm like, wait a second. I have something in my discard pile I can use right away. So, yeah, that was kind of neat. And having him in Shadows to start the game was good because I only started with one character in play, so that second game against Chris, he wasn't. I knew he wasn't going to open the game with First Snow of Winter because I only had one character on the board. He would be assured of bouncing. So it was kind of nice having Crescent in Shadows that, you know, was going to ignore the First Snow if I just left him in Shadows. But I would say my MVP was probably either Power of Faith or Fear of Winter. Artist Seduction, I think I pinned three different people on Valor on a second turn kind of thing. So, well, actually, nice. I pinned Chris twice on Valor.
In the two different games?
Yes.
I guess sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do.
Yeah. So, but, yeah, that's that.
Nice. I would say if I had an MVP, which I didn't really have an MVP, but some surprising results in that last game that I played was Womb of the World. After you win Dominance, get a Dothraki back from your dead pile. And so I had the Dothraki Vanguard die, and I mean, I just kept bringing them back every turn. I was able to play them the next turn. Surprisingly fun, and yeah, and it works. You know, when you have Meraxes, you're probably going to win Dominance every time. You know, very few times are you not going to. And so that's kind of fun, just to be able to recycle that. I mean, it's not obviously not going to work outside of a Dothraki deck. Maybe if you wanted to kill your Drogo, who lets you search for Dothraki, and then win Dominance and grab him again. Like, there can be some cool stuff in there. So I was very impressed with how that card performed. And I couldn't believe I actually put it in the deck.
Yeah.
Kind of. I forgot I had it in there. So.
But when you've got Dothraki which comes into play abilities, that's not bad to get more uses out of them.
It's good stuff.
Cool. Let's see. For me, I think I would probably have to go with maybe Ashmark Knight as my favorite new addition. There were definitely a couple games where I had a couple spare draws left out of my draw cap and had extra land support counselors and things in my hand that it was totally worth just tossing cards out of my hand to try and draw into an answer, and it definitely paid off against like Jacob when I was able to draw into an enslaved to take his Janus Slint and things like that. So I think he does a lot of solid work.
Yeah, that card's awesome.
Yeah, and if I had to pick a secondary, maybe I'd throw that out to City Besieged. I saw that plot everywhere this weekend. Not only my decks, but my opponents. But it was really useful to have that available. So that's me.
Cool.
All right. Maybe a more general props and slops. Does anybody have any non-Thrones related stuff they wanted to hit on? I'll take that as a no.
I mean, right now, I might as well update everyone. I'm about halfway through the first Mistborn book, The Last Empire. It's okay so far.
See, this is how you're going to stay accountable, Daryl.
That's right. I mean, I have to.
Give us updates every week.
Yeah, I'm using all the social networks I can to just tell people so that whenever they don't see a post for all, they'll be like, dude, Daryl, what the hell's up? But I'm going to keep on keeping on with it. So, but, you know, aside from that tournament, I mean, didn't really do a whole lot between last episode and this episode to really have much of any kind of prop.
Yeah, yeah, I suppose my week has been pretty slow as well as far as doing new things. Though on the book front, I seem to have lost my large anthology of awesome authors, that Dangerous Woman that I was reading. And somehow, within the last couple days, I've misplaced it. So, slops to my crappy-ass memory.
Oh, that's a bummer.
Yep. Don't know where I put it.
Greg, you got anything?
Let me borrow that.
What's that? Oh.
You can let me borrow it.
That's why it's gone. Now, I'll track it down. At Greg's house. Bum, bum, bum.
I don't think we have really anything else.
Oh, I have one more.
Oh, do you have one
more?
Yeah,
because music reminded me. I'm not sure if this is a proper slop, but Kristen, my girlfriend, did make me watch Rent Sunday night because she loves it, and, you know, it's a musical and such, and one of the songs has been stuck in my head since then. I think that's probably why I can't decide whether it's a prop or a slop. So there you go, guys. If you're a Rent fan, I currently have La Vie Boheme stuck in my head right now.
Well, at least you know how many minutes are in a year.
Yeah, that too. That too. That's
the most important part of it.
Valuable knowledge.
Yeah.
For reference, though, I actually measure a life by how many Thrones games you win.
Oh, shit.
So, yeah.
I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
Need to win more.
Okay, but aside from that, now I'm set.
Yeah. Little side note. What's, geez, a gentleman on Facebook, oh my gosh, is it Alex Hines?
Yes, Istarl.
Yeah, I kept wanting to call him Aaron. Yeah, so he has and I don't know who else he's working with or whatever, but they have a Google Doc set up, and I guess they're just trying to make a habit of recording every tournament and, like, getting those stats, which is really awesome. You know, it's obviously something we can admire and get behind because we've tried to put those kind of numbers together. So it's good to see somebody else is doing it, which is awesome.
It's worth pointing out, it's not just like a spreadsheet. For anybody that looked at the ones that I tallied stuff up on before, like, Alex is doing a lot of, like, macroing and crazy stuff here. With drop downs to, and like tracking, restricted cards. And like, if you put an agenda down, like say the Maester's Path, it automatically marks it as restricted and auto populates all these charts and things. Like, it is pretty intricate stuff that he's doing.
Yeah, it's definitely done right and not half assed.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So, go look for it. He posted it as the Annals of Castle Black over on Card Game DB.
Yeah.
He links over to the Google Doc. And yes, if you're just glancing at that, that really does look like anal. So, figured everybody would be a fan of that.
Also, in case you're still curious about our Twitch page, we're going to try and do some streaming, hopefully here soon. Kyle and I have talked about it. I've got all the Octagon plugins rolling, and we're going to try to just play some games. And if you guys want to watch or chat or make fun of how bad I suck, you'll be able to do that. So if you have not followed our Twitch page yet, we would appreciate that if you did that, so you could be up to date whenever we do decide to do some maybe impromptu streaming, or whenever we try to get that event up and off the ground when we are going to record an episode and record it live, quote-unquote, you know, per se.
Yeah.
So it's just twitch.com or twitch.tv/2champs1chump.
Right. And I assume whenever you and Kyle do some streaming, you'll probably like post up on Facebook to announce it also, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah. We're going to use every venue to do so. And that's just a good time just to hang out, and we're just going to play some games and chat with you if you want to do that. So it's all good. Obviously, you have any ideas, any emails or anything you want to send us, you can do that at 2champs1chump@gmail.com. We receive your emails every time you send them. I don't know if we respond to everyone or whatever. I don't know if we mentioned the Canadian gentleman who sent an email to us, but that was a really awesome
Taylor.
Email.
Yep.
Taylor.
He actually guest hosted once about a year and a half ago, something like that. Helped me out in a pinch. Yep.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, but that was a super nice message from him.
Yeah, so that's always awesome. And if you have any ideas for the show or questions or whatever, that's a nice personal way to do it. If you don't want everyone to see it or whatever, you can also send us a Facebook message or put it on the wall of our Facebook. I think that's everything.
I think so.
All right. Thank you for listening to another fine episode of Two Champs, One Chump.